Dublin's Talking Sport.
Welcome to Dublin's Talking Sports podcast with me, Ken Doherty, and my good friend, Reggie Corrigan. Thanks for tuning in to catch up on the latest GAA, football, rugby, and all the crack. Enjoy the show, and don't forget, rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
We've another great show for you this week on Dublin's Talking Sport. George McDonagh gives us a preview of the Aintree Grand National and gives us one or two outsiders that might be in with a chance of taking down that wonderful race. In rugby, we spoke to Victor Costello about Leinster's brilliant win against Connacht, but also about Munster and what they need to do and try and get themselves out of the tough situation they find themselves in at the moment. In GAA, we are talking hurling with Sean Lane, and in football, we're talking to the one and only Alan Cawley. And Deirdre Smith gives us a look at all of the Masters action so far and the chances of whether or not Shane Lowry can get the job done. So as always, download the show now wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, Reg. How are you?
I'm not so bad. Hard luck. Didn't quite go to plan yesterday.
No, it didn't. No, I lost 6-4 in the end, and it went down quite late after 12 o'clock last night. No, I was disappointed. Got back to 4-all. But now end up losing 6-4 in the end, and the dream is over. The dream is over. 25 years on, the dream is over.
It's heartbreaking. We were disappointed.
We'd love to see
you get that qualifier in. It's a tough old gig, isn't it, that whole qualifying station?
Yeah, it is. It is very, very tough, you know. And it, as you get older, it gets even tougher, you know. That's the problem. But yeah, it's hard, you know, because it serves, you know, a lot of great memories there, you know, like walking out in the Crucible and stuff like that. And when you have to go back to the qualifiers and into the boxes, you know, it's like a different world, you know, and it is very, very tough, you know.
How many enter into those qualifiers, Ken, from the outset?
Well, the top 16 are already guaranteed to the Crucible, which starts next Saturday. And then there's 100, I think there's about 138 or maybe a little bit more, 140 players in it this year. There's about 24 invited sort of amateurs who aren't actually on the tour. So there's been a few women in there, and a few young kids as well from different countries have been invited to play, which is great as well, you know, because it gives them some hope for the future as well. Yes, there's about 100 and probably about 128 players that have to be whittled down to 16.
Right. Okay. Well, you just have to concentrate.
It's quite tough. All right. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Back in the commentary box and back for the seniors of the Crucible after the World Championships.
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. Mm. It'll also give you a bit more time. I know how big we both are into the golf.
To
watch the Masters, and it's been great stuff so far. It looks brilliant. It looks so good at the moment. The colours and everything else. It just looks amazing. But Shane Lowry, what about Shane Lowry? He's gone great.
Brilliant. Absolutely fantastic. A great round. You know, we needed a good round, you know, after his first round to get back into contention. But what a 68 shot yesterday, you know, and some of the putts that he made. And even the one on 18 that could have been made, and he would have been second on his own behind Scottie Scheffler. So he's put himself in a great position. I think he loves the course, even though, and it was playing tough yesterday with the wind and stuff, it was swirling all over the place. But fantastic run for him. So it's very exciting to see him right up at the leaderboard, and a big couple of days for him.
Yeah, it'll be something else, I must say.
Yeah, the course looks amazing, doesn't it, though?
Absolutely,
it just looks absolutely
incredible. It's on the bucket list. Yeah. We'll get there someday. It's definitely an OB, you know. We could do an outside broadcast from over there. What do you reckon? Yeah. Carry on.
You better speak to Joe Harrington about that one.
I'll be talking to Joe for quite a while to get us over there, that's for sure. But Schwartzel was really impressive. And Scheffler, I mean, what, like, you know.
Well, Scheffler, he just burnt up the course, didn't he? Yeah, incredible. And he sort of, I know he's world number one now, but nobody has really heard a lot about him, you know, apart from sort of real sort of golfers of the golfing world. But, you know, he wouldn't be instantly recognisable, would he, as a world number one? And he's just, he's had an amazing season, very, very consistent, you know, consistent winner. And, Shane, he just tore that, you know, very, very difficult golf course. A lot of great players really struggled with it. A lot of great players even missed the cut. I mean, you look at Brooks Koepka there as well, who really struggled, a four-time major winner. But he tore it apart, and he's going to be hard to stop. You know, he's got a five-shot lead. I think four of the previous half-time sort of halfway leaders of five shots or more have gone on to one of it, to win it, you know. Yeah. So there's only one that hasn't. So he, but that adds pressure in itself, and it'll be interesting to see how he can sort of hold himself together, because the Masters is unlike any other tournament. Like, you know, it's a very, very special tournament, particularly for Americans as well, you know.
Yeah, he looks so relaxed though, doesn't he? He seems to be laughing and joking with the caddy and just...
Yeah.
Doesn't seem to be letting the pressure. I know, like, the next 2 days are the hardest part, but, like, when you're looking at it at the moment, you're kind of saying, this guy just looks like he feels it's his already.
Yeah, he looks very, very good, you know, and he looks very cool, very calm. He looks like to be really enjoying it. And that's half the battle sometimes. If you can do that and play, you know, you sort of, what do they say? When you play like it means nothing, when it means everything. And that's what he looks like he's doing and really enjoying it as well, you know.
Mm, absolutely. Well, what about Lowry?
Oh, it's going to be a brilliant finish.
You know, his wedge play, he's so good with that in around the green stuff. I still kind of fancy him.
Yeah, and he's a great putter as well. You know, he's got a great touch. You need to be a great shot maker around that course because of the greens and the undulations and just the way the course is set up. And I think he has all the shots, you know. He would have learned all that, you know, in Baltrae, of course, and Pomeska Hills where he is. But, you know, playing on the links courses in Ireland, I know it's not a links course at Augusta, but you still need to be able to make shots like you do on links courses. And he's a great putter. And I think he's in with a great show. He's won a major as well, of course, don't forget. He's won the British Open. So he's no sort of fear factor in that regard of getting over the line. And I think he has a really good chance. I really hope that he follows it up now with another good, like, under par round today.
And Tiger, what about that?
Well, Tiger, it's great to see him back, isn't it?
How does he do it?
Yeah, I know. I mean, you know, the stories were saying that he could have had that leg amputated. If I had been anybody else, it might have been already. You know, that's how serious that accident was. And it was only about, what was it, 16 months ago. Yeah. So, it's great to see him back. He just brings something special to every tournament he plays in, and particularly the Masters, you know. And it's great to see him make the cut. And he's right in the hunt as well. He's not like, he's not there to make up the numbers, you know. He's just an amazing player, you know.
He really is incredible, no doubt about it. Okay, well, plenty of good work.
Bit like you, Reg, you know, like a bit like you around, never, like Bray Head there, you know.
I'll never lie down; just keep going. That's me.
Yeah. You bring a lot. You bring a lot to the game.
Yeah, as I'm in the bushes looking for another ball.
That's
the other difference between me and Tiger. He has someone finding all his balls that he hits into the bushes. I don't find mine. That's the problem. Yeah. That's the only difference.
Reggie, you couldn't even drive the buggy straight, for goodness sake.
Right, Champions League, let's move on. What did you think of it during the week? Did you watch much of it?
I did, yeah. It was excellent. I mean, some cracking matches. I thought Real Madrid were unbelievable, weren't they, against Chelsea, and they have a mountain to climb. City did well, and Liverpool did well. They were meeting the semi-finals, but it's, I thought, you know, Chelsea looked like they're probably going to go out. I can't see them overturn a 3-1 deficit. And Benzema was quite incredible as well. The two headers he got were just amazing, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. It could have been more for in fairness to Chelsea, they battled hard. Like, they had a huge amount of possession. They looked like they would score more, and there was that mistake, and there's little things that cost them. But Real Madrid, they just seem to have found back that bit of class that they had. They went through a real bumpy patch there for a while, but they've seemed to have brought that back.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you'd have to say they're real contenders again for winning the title. I know the other side is kind of with City, and that is going to be tough on Liverpool, but you can't write Real Madrid off at all. And certainly with Bayern Munich were poor, like against Villarreal.
So yeah.
They're the best of the best if you take after Liverpool and City.
Yeah. Yeah, of course, and as I said, they'll probably play each other in the semi-finals, so they won't have to worry about them, and they could end up playing Villarreal, although you would fancy Bayern Munich to overcome that deficit, you know, when they play at home. I thought they were value for money. I thought they played great. They've got some young players that Vecinius, it looks really, really quality player. Very exciting when he gets on the ball. And at 34, Benzema with a hat-trick, quite incredible. But yeah, now they've got some great players in there in that squad, you know. Yeah. Modric and Cruz are still, even though they're getting on a little bit, they've still got a lot of class. And really top class footballers. But yeah, great to see the Champions League. And City and Liverpool in the semi final will be a classic as well, over two legs. I mean, that's one to savour, you know, and it should be fat. At least one of them will be in the final of the Champions League.
Yeah, no question about it. Okay. Mm.
Finally,
then we'll talk a bit about United, as we always do. Everton away this week. Everton are poor at the minute, although, you know, you can never write them off at home. But, like, that battle for top four, and there's only 3 points, you know, between seventh and fourth at the minute. And Spurs, Arsenal, West Ham, and United all battling around there. Get the job done today against Everton.
Yeah, but it's always tough. You know, that Goodison match is always a tough match. Everton are really struggling. I mean, they lost to Burnley during the week. And they could be going down. I mean, you couldn't imagine Everton going down. But it's quite possible now. You know, they're in free fall. They have been for a few months, even though Frank Lampard had gone in there. But that was a really bad defeat during the week, 3-2 away to Burnley. The last couple of minutes, Burnley scored the winner. So that is going to knock them for six. So it's a good time probably to play them, but always very, very tough playing them at Goodison. I mean, the way United are playing at the moment, I whack them to beat Rathmines boys. So so it's going to be quite difficult, like, you know. Yeah. But they've got to, it looks like they're going to appoint that Ten Hag, you know, from Ajax. So he's got a big job on his hands. He's going to need a lot of work there over the summer stuff when he takes over, and it'll be interesting to see what he brings to Manchester United.
Football time now. Delighted to be joined on the line by the one and only Alan Cawley. Good morning, Al. How are you?
I'm good, Reggie. How are you?
I'm very well. Yeah, God, it's so good much stuff. Sport on. It's just cracking at the minute. I'm glued to the Masters, loving every bit of it. Mm. Getting given out to at home. Turn off that golf. I'm not watching that again. But I'd say that's an argument that's been had in many a house around the country this weekend. But there was plenty of football going on as well last night. Some interesting results, I'd say, is the best way to describe it. We'll start with the Rovers one. A good win for them, badly needed. 2-1 over Shelburne.
Yeah, I was in Talca Park last night, Reggie, at the game. As you see, I took a little bit of break from the golf also myself and nipped out for a couple of hours to go to the match. So it was a good win. The first half was an absolute stroll in the park for Shamrock Rovers. They were very, very good on top of Shelburne being very, very bad. And as I said, they never laid a glove on them. Shamrock Rovers in total control, scored an early goal through Andy Lyons. And if anything, you're thinking it was a 1-0 hammering at half time. But to be fair, Shelburne came out in the second half, got a little bit better in terms of their performance and the improvement. They made a switch, which was a big switch. They brought off Conor Kane at left full and brought on Shane Griffin and moved Cameron Ledwidge to left wing back. And he had a huge impact on the game. And it was him who set up the goal and the equaliser for Shane Farrell. And it looked like at that stage, Shelburne had gained a lot of confidence from that. And all of a sudden, Shamrock Rovers had gotten themselves into a major mess from going to being totally in control of the game to looking like they'll only come away with a point. But then they made a couple of substitutions themselves late on, and with the quality that they're bringing off the bench, it was only a matter of time, you felt really, that one of them might do something. And it was Aaron Green who popped up. Mandrow played a lovely ball across to him, and it was a great finish, and it was a huge 3 points, because as I say, it was looking with 20 minutes to go like the game might peter out to a 1-1 draw, but it was a massive, massive 3 points for Shamrock Rovers.
Yeah, and just what they needed to keep themselves in contention with Derry City, still to play Finn Harps a little bit later, one they'd be very much expected to win. So if they win that, they'll go 6 points clear of Rovers. So a crucial win for Shamrock Rovers. St. Pat's held Dundalk to a 0-0 draw. I'd say it was a little bit tense, was it, with Stephen O'Donnell heading back in there to Pat's after departing the club?
Yeah, by all accounts, Reggie, I only saw a couple of little highlights when I came home from the Shelburne game, and by all accounts, it was a tense night. Obviously, there's a lot of disharmony, I suppose, with how Stevie left, as you well know, after winning the cup, and that was his return to Richmond Park. The fans weren't happy. I know the owner still not happy, Gareth Kelleher, and as far as I know, there may be still even a case going on, but it certainly, there was no pleasantries exchanged anyway, but there was a football match and they ended up drawing nil all in the game. I think Pats will be disappointed with that. From what I've seen and from what I've read, they were the better team and had the better chances. So I'm sure Dundalk would be delighted to come out with the point, but I'd say St. Pat's would be disappointed. And it looks like they've just dropped off the top two. We thought maybe St. Pat's with a couple of wins early on, that they may be in contention as well to possibly push the other two. But even after 8 or 9 games and the inconsistency with them, it kind of looks as though we might not see that. It might just be a two-horse race. But I'd say they'd be disappointed that it was only a nil-all draw.
Absolutely. Okay, Bows were in control of the game. Looked like they had the job done against Drogheda. And then Dean Williams was the hero for Drogheda late in the game, getting that equaliser. And again, another disappointing result for Bows.
Yeah, very disappointing, especially after them getting a really good 3 points on the road in Sligo during the week. And they were hoping to build on that. They got an early goal. They went 1-0 up with a penalty, Dawson Devoy. And as you say, it looked like they were in control with a late goal, a sucker punch again for conceding. But Drogheda will be over the moon with that. And they've picked up themselves over the last couple of weeks. So it wasn't an easy game for Bows by any means. But it's just been very much stop-start for them so far. And to get one good result and they can't follow it up then with another. And as I say, it's frustrating for the fans at the moment, and I'm sure it's frustrating for Keith Long. They just can't string a run together at all, or even go back to back with victory. So they'll be disappointed with that. But I'd say overall, Kevin Doherty would be delighted with the point, especially, you know, yourself, when you score late on, Reggie, you'd be delighted with that.
Absolutely. And Sligo, of course, have UCD, which they should get the job done there. That'll bounce them back up to third place again. Can't take it for granted, but they need to get back on the winning ways again, Sligo.
Yeah, definitely. UCD have been struggling, and the jump is just so big, Reggie, from the First Division to the Premier. They're finding it really, really tough and really difficult. And as you say, Sligo Rovers should get back on track. But they've had two disappointing results. They've got beat by Shelburne last week. They got beat by Bows during the week. So it's a good opportunity to get back on the horse, and I think it's one that they're under a little bit of pressure going into it, because not only have they had two bad defeats, they've had two bad performances as well, and I don't think the fans have been too pleased with the last week. So it's a good opportunity to get back on the horse and try and get a victory against a struggling UCD team.
Absolutely. Okay, it was Champions League during the week, an interesting couple of nights all around. City left it late, but they were kind of, you know, pushing hard against Atletico, but they got the job done 1-0. But Liverpool, they were impressive, it has to be said, against Benfica. We expected them to get that result, but they did. They looked just in control of that game.
Yeah, I think the draw has been favourable to them. We all said that after the draw was made. And of course, Man City had a tricky one. Atletico, even though it's not the Atletico of old, they're still very strong. They're very resilient, very defensive, and they were always going to make it very, very hard for Man City. And I think that was the pattern of the game, the way it played out, that City would be in control in terms of possession and pushing for goals. But could they just break through? And they did, as you say, De Bruyne laid on. So they'll be delighted to get the victory. But I think there's still plenty of life left in that tie. But Liverpool, as I said, the draw was favourable to them. I saw Benfica in the qualifying stages, and I'm surprised that they've actually gotten through to this quarter-final stage. And I always fancied Liverpool to beat them and to go away, win as comprehensively as they did. The only blot in the copybook really on the night was the concession of the goal for Benfica. But to win 3-1 away from home, they'll be delighted with that, especially going into the game, the big game in the league tomorrow. And they should get the job done then next week in the second leg. But they're so strong, Liverpool, Reggie, and Man City. They're just setting unbelievable standards, really. And when you think of the runs that they're on, I know we'll probably talk about the big league game tomorrow, but when you think of the run of form that both teams are on, even just a draw in any game is almost seen as a slip-up. It's crazy, really, when you think about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And Chelsea were disappointing against Real Madrid, but I said it to Ken earlier, Real Madrid are looking like the team. They're back.
Yeah, Real Madrid, yeah, they've been phenomenal in the last couple. Like, when you think, even if you go back to the last round against PSG, at half-time, I had Real Madrid completely written off. PSG were in total control. They were playing absolutely brilliant. And then, obviously, we saw the collapse of PSG and Benzema getting the hat-trick, and he was phenomenal. And it looks like as if that has given them huge confidence as well, as if that was needed, because they've a lot of great players, as we know, but maybe a couple of ageing players. But you look at Benzema again during the week, he's been absolutely phenomenal. And to score another hat-trick is unbelievable, because I probably would have fancied Chelsea overall in the two legs, but they've put themselves into a great position now, Real Madrid, to finish off the job. And as I say, they're obviously playing with a lot of confidence coming off the back of that big win against PSG, and now to beat Chelsea as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you mentioned it there. City, Liverpool, Sunday, 4:30. It's going to be an absolute humdinger of a game. Just kind of impossible to call it, really, I'd be honest.
Yeah, it's as good as it gets, Reggie. I think these two teams have just been probably... They could be two of the best we've ever seen in the league. It's phenomenal, really, as I say. The points tallies, the run of form, the runs unbeaten, 10, 11, 12 matches. I think Liverpool have won their last 10 in the league. The last time they got beat by was by Leicester over Christmas. I know they lost Inter Milan as well in the Champions League, but they're doing it on all fronts as well, in the cup competitions, the Champions League. And Man City are the same. It's just phenomenal. And it's almost like the two of them are dragging each other along. And it is, it's very difficult to call. Right now, at this moment in time, I think all the momentum is with Liverpool. Yeah. But in saying that, despite the fact that they've won all those games, they haven't been their brilliant best, but they're getting the job done, which is always a good sign of a good team as well, that even when you're not at your best, they still know how to get the job done and do enough to get the victory. And that's what it has been like for the last number of weeks.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't surprise me at all to see them go to the Etihad and win. But at the same time, we all know how good Man City are as well. So I'm just really looking forward to it, Reggie. As I said, I think these two teams have just been setting such an unbelievable pace, setting unbelievable standards over the last two or three seasons. And it should be an absolute cracker of a game.
Okay. Tuesday night, the women are taking on Sweden. Sweden top of that group, of course, on 18 points. But Ireland have only played 4 games. They're sitting on 7. A very difficult game for them to go away and try and get a result in.
Yeah, a difficult game. I'm looking forward to it, though, Reggie. And they've put themselves in a position now, the girls, where if they can get the victory, it's in their own hands, really, to maybe get that playoff spot against Sweden. So I'm really looking forward to the game. Difficult, as you say. But last week, obviously, the under-21s went away to Sweden, the men's team, and won. So it'd be great if the women's team could follow it up and get a victory now during the week.
Yeah, well, a draw, I think, would be a great result as well, though, wouldn't it, if they could manage to hold on for that? Because Finland, Slovakia and Georgia, they're the ones in that group, and they're not really making any great shapes either, you know?
No, it's going to probably come down to this game, you know, and as I said, they'll be putting it in their own hands then, and because you'd expect them to get the victories against the other teams in the group. So this is the one, really, and I'm sure Vera Powell is fully aware of that. This is really going to be almost like a decider in the group, I feel. So once they don't get beat, as you say, it keeps them still in the hunt. And I think that's the approach that they will take as well. So hopefully they can get the job done, and it will be great for the women's team.
Yeah, absolutely. We wish them all the very best of luck as well. You'll be heartbroken. I know your other love is snooker. Ken didn't quite get the qualification into it, but a really exciting championship coming up.
Yeah, you mentioned it there at the start, Reggie, about April, and obviously this weekend all the sport and stuff, but I find April is the best sporting month, bar, I suppose, if we have a World Cup or European Championships. But definitely I find April, with the Masters Golf, the World Championships and the snooker, the Grand National, the Champions League knockout rounds as well. So I always find April to be a great month, and it is a pity with Ken, but actually he's more a pundit now at this stage, Reggie. He'd be flat out in the punditry, so he will. So I'm really looking forward to it. And you look at the form, Robertson. I know you love the snooker as well. Yeah. Robertson has been the star player so far. I'd love to see him go on now and finish it off in the World Championships. But Ronnie as well. Will it be Ronnie's final swan song? I'm sure we'll talk about it more when it comes round. But I think he's running out of time to catch Hendry, and this could be his last chance, I feel.
Absolutely. Okay, who have you got on the podcast this week?
We're hoping to have Tony Sheridan, but it's not confirmed yet, Reggie, but we'll definitely have him either this week or next week. But we'll be back up and running anyway this week.
Golf, time to turn our attention to the Masters. I'm delighted to be joined, as always, by Deirdre Smith. Good morning, Deirdre. How are you?
Morning, Reggie. How are you?
I'm very good. I was glued to it last night. For the last couple of days, I've been in and out of it, but last night, glued to it. I couldn't take my eyes off the Lowry match. There was a couple of more chances that he could have had, and even at that, he's still doing brilliantly. 3 under, and we can dare to dream?
Absolutely. You know, we know he's been here before, he has that. He has the pedigree for major championships, and you know the conditions at the weekend are going to suit him. It's going to be cool. It's going to be windy. Magnificent short game. He knows that if he doesn't hit the greens, he's going to get up and down. You know, you can't overpower Augusta. You've just got to play it, and you've got to play the shots right and left. And he's a shot maker, and he certainly was one of my picks earlier in the week, and. look, it's just great that he's there, and it's great that we have three Irish in that have made the cut. I mean, just as good as Lowry at the top, isn't it great that Power made the cut too? So,
absolutely, and
even though Scheffler is five ahead, look, it's the Masters, and it doesn't really start till the back nine on Sunday. So, lots to hope for. Even Rory, he's not gone either. You know, yep. good round. I was hoping he'd. To be honest, I was hoping he'd be drawn today with Ram because they're both on the same score and that they might inspire each other, but that hasn't happened. But he needs more birdies. I think, to be honest, Rory's been a bit conservative. Mm. It looks like he's just trying to play to the conservative parts of the greens, and then he's not holding the putts. He's only made 5-6 birdies in comparison to Scheffler, who's made 11. And you're always going to make bogeys around Augusta, and you need the birdies to balance out the books. And he just hasn't made enough. His cards have been very clean. He's only had 3 bogeys. Well, he had a double on 15. That was the big mistake on the first round. But clean card yesterday, only bogeyed the first, and then he had 5 birdies, which is really solid, you know. So if he can bring that into today, who knows?
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting what you said there about Augusta being a course that you have to create shots in. If you look at someone like DeChambeau, who was supposed to be going to take the world by storm with this Power game and everything else, I think he's 12 or 13 under he ended up afterwards. So it just proves the fact that you can have all the power in the world, but golf is about shot placement.
Yeah, well, look, it isn't Augusta. I mean, that's why it's such a magnificent challenge. You know, it's you've got to be able to shape the ball left and right. You've got to be able to put it in, hit them in low. You've got to hit them in high. You know, it's the soul of the game, really. They be able to make shots, to be a shot maker. And that's why Lowry has done well. And the British Open is the same. And all his links experience now will come into play. And especially with the wind, playing low shots, playing, you know, using the wind rather than fighting against the wind. And he has all that experience, so he's not trying to rely on a shot this week that he doesn't know. It just comes natural to him. Week in, week out on the tour, it's bang it down the middle and put it on the green, and it's kind of boring golf, to be honest. But when you come to the likes of the Masters and the British Open, particularly those two, you know, where you have a different challenge, and the course is set up where you have to play all sorts of shots, and pins are tucked in behind bunkers, and then if you miss the green, you've got to have the fantastic touch. And he has that. He's a marvellous short game. So, but look, it's all about the mind now at the weekend and keeping his mind. And, you know, Scottie Scheffler has shown what a great champion he is, and he won the match play. So he'll be a hard man to catch, but hopefully he'll come back to the field and we'll get a chance to see a few others challenge him.
Yeah, well, leaving the Irish aside then on that challenge, I've been impressed with Neiman, who had that double bogey at the end to drop back to 1 under, but he was going so well all the way along. But Matsuyama as well, and Dustin Johnson doesn't look like he's playing great, but he's 2 under, you know. He could come from nowhere as well. So there's plenty still there that could come back at Scheffler.
Sure, yeah, and Justin Thomas too shot 5 under yesterday. I mean, he had a poor round, first round, 76, but he shot 7 yesterday, and I fancy him really, and I think that 5 under was tremendous confidence from yesterday. Maybe put a bit too much pressure on himself first round. He said he's played practice rounds with Tiger, so he's getting the best advice about the course. Justin Johnson, I agree. Colin Morikawa played well yesterday too. You know, there's a lot of, and as you say, Matsuyama, and he's won it before. You know, that takes, you know, sometimes people say, oh, I don't really fancy somebody who's won it before. I like someone who's won it before because they know they can do it. And also, there's no pressure on them. They don't care whether they win it or not. And that's huge. Like, I know they care, but they don't have that extra pressure that Rory has or Justin Thomas, who hasn't won it before. So, look, it's a bit like the Grand National, Reggie. You know, it's very hard to pick a winner. No matter what stage of the tournament, it's very hard to pick a winner at the Masters. Obviously, Scheffler is the clear favourite now. Excuse me, but you know, it's a big tournament. It's the Masters, and you know, we saw Spieth a few years ago being 4 or 5 clear and dumping it in the water in the 12th and taking a 7 or an 8. So. Anything can happen, and when the wind gets up and the gremlins get into the mind and you're not sure what the club is and you start second-guessing yourself, that's where mistakes come. And then your confidence goes, and it can go in after one shot. It's just, that's just the game it is, you know. And you know, it's all to play for, but it's a marvellous tournament, an iconic venue, magical place, you know. It's one of those tournaments, I think, that it's a bit like the Grand National. If you never had an interest in golf or horse racing, you're watching today. So, and we'll all look forward to it for the weekend.
Absolutely. Indeed, we will. Okay. I want to mention as well, the Ladies Scratch Cup is on at the Hermitage Golf Club in Lucan this week. When is it coming up? The 50th anniversary. When is that coming up?
It's on Sunday, the 1st of May, and sponsored by Hudson Rooms at Liffey Valley. It's a marvellous scratch cup. And you know, if there was any golf course in the country that you could compare to Augusta, you'd compare Hermitage. It's just a magnificent golf course, beautifully manicured, you know, presented pristinely at all times. Really high profile winners. Katrina Matthew won the scratch cup here, Stalham Cup captain, and Leona Maguire was a 3-time winner. So you never know. It can be the start of a golfing career for somebody. There's just been so many great past champions, so I wish them all the best and get your entries in for it.
Time to turn our attention to GAA now. I'm delighted to be joined in studio by Sean Lane. Good morning, Sean. How are you?
Morning, Reggie. I'm like yourself. I'm enjoying the Masters.
Yeah, absolutely. It's great. Well, it's a slightly smaller ball and the clubs are not quite as good as maybe they are in the hurling. But, you know, it's the same idea, let's say. You know, if you can play hurling, you can certainly play golf. There's no question about that. And playing hurling is something that Waterford did very well last week. We spoke in detail about that game and what was likely to happen between Cork and Waterford. I sort of felt Cork, you felt Waterford, you were bang on, and Waterford were just very impressive 6-point winners.
Yeah, they were, and you'd probably have to say that 6 points probably wasn't enough in the way they played. I think the jigsaw's coming into place, Reggie, this year. I mean, with Tadhg de Bourcq back, they scored 4 goals, and we could talk about that all day, but they really closed up good forwards that Cork had on the day. Connor Prunty and Tadhg de Bourcq have a fantastic understanding between them. They don't, you know, they manage the two lines and they keep them very close together, which cuts down the space, particularly on the Cork forwards the last day. But up front, Stephen Bennett getting 2 goals, Desi Hutchinson and Patrick Curran. I mean, they were just running at the Cork defence, and it's something that Cork are really, really going to have to look forward to. But, you know, if you're talking about Munster Championship, Waterford's first game is at home to Tipperary. If they get that, you know, Waterford, I believe, will be the first one to of the three to qualify for the playoffs.
Yeah, and that Munster Championship, I mean, there's always a big difference, you know, when you shift over from league to championship. There's a noticeable difference, and sometimes teams that you think are going to romp it don't. And I don't know, championship brings out something different in the other teams, in all teams. Limerick, of course, another one. Like, where do you see the championship going?
Yeah, I suppose, well, firstly, I would be tipping Waterford, obviously, to actually get to the Munster final. It's the top two, Reggie, as you know, get to the final, and the third one gets the quarterfinal spot. So I would tip Waterford to get one of the places. I'd still tip Cork. I think Tipperary under Colin Bonner are just rebuilding. They're missing players and a couple of retirements. And Clare, they'll be very hard to beat in Ennis, but I don't think they'll accumulate enough points to qualify. But Cork, certainly, you know, they've beaten Kilkenny twice on the run, an All-Ireland semi-final and a National League semi-final where everybody's trying. They're still great forwards in Kingston, Conor Lehan, Patrick Horgan, I could go on, Jack O'Connor. You know, they've marvellous stick work, they've marvellous speed, and they just need to, Reggie, close it up a little bit at the back, Corker, after conceding 6 goals in the last 2 games. And you know, Reggie, it takes 19 points to beat 6 goals, so they certainly need to tighten up there. But I would see Cork being the number two contender coming out of there. We can't forget Limerick. I mean, you know, if you throw players like, and I won't name them all, Reggie, but if you throw Keane Lynch, Gerard Hegarty, Kyle Hayes, Dermot Bourne, Declan Hannan, Aaron Glad, I could go on. You know, they're not all going to get tired in the one time. I genuinely get the distinct impression Limerick won 3 Munsters in a row, they've 3 out of 4. They'll do anything, I think, in their power to try and win a 3 All-Irelands in a row. Very few counties have done it. Their own county back 34, 36 and 40, that's the 3 times they got nearest to a 3 in a row. But I think that Limerick will come all hell you know, when the championship comes, and their first game, Reggie, is away to Cork. So all hell will break loose that day as well, yeah, next weekend, you know.
Very good. Okay, look, you've tipped Cork, Limerick, Waterford to come out of Munster. How did you see the Leinster Championship going? It's fair, you know, to say Kilkenny and Wexford were impressive in the league so far, but if you leave out Wexford's disappointing performance against Waterford in the semi-final, how's the Leinster Championship going to fare out,
yeah, you think? I suppose, you know, there's a couple of unknowns here. Firstly, let me deal with that one. The Galway's performance is, you know, a little bit unknown. The one real standout performance that Galway would have had would have been away to Limerick, a game that was televised on a Saturday night. Smashing game. Galway forwards worked so hard. You could see Henry Shefflin's influence on them. Having said that, Reggie, the following week they go out and they play Wexford up in Salt Hill and they lose that game. Mm. So there's a lack of consistency there. Mm. On the Wexford point of view, they won all five games. You'd be saying, well, look, that's great. On the back of a very poor Walsh Cup final against Dublin inside in Croke Park on that day, I was rubbing my hands. I'd say Dublin will definitely get through. But, you know, Wexford regrouped and unfortunately then fell flat on the game that you mentioned against Waterford. So I think if you look at them, the one standout in Leinster, I think Kilkenny are best positioned, and I would be tipping them as number one. I would tip Kilkenny to actually win the Leinster Championship this year. You know, he has found an extra player or two. He's playing Brian Cody, that is. He's playing Parik Walsh in the forwards, who's adding to it. He's TJ Reid to bring back his own Cody there. He's found that, you know, Billy Ryan is another very, very fast inside forward. And look at the back, he's very well equipped at the back. He's DJ Carey's young lad after coming in to join Hugh Lawler and Paddy Deegan. These are all experienced players. Mm. And you know, so I believe Kilkenny are certainly number one. I think Dublin, had a very, very good league campaign. Unfortunately, Kilkenny turned them over and beat them very, very badly in Parnell Park. Taking that and leaving that aside, Dublin's performance in Turles, where they beat Tipperary down there. Dublin drew with Waterford in the first round of the National League. Matty Kenny has added a few players to his panel. You know, he's a few injuries to come back, Liam Rush and Young Boland. So, you know, I would tip Dublin to be kind of two or three. And I would see the last spot between Galway and Wexford. Wexford, if you take them up front, Wexford, very, very good. You only have to look at Lee Chin. The standout player of the National League, Reggie, without a shadow of a doubt, was Rory O'Connor. He was scored 113, 115. He's going to be awful hard to mark. And if Conor McDonald comes back to form. But there's a question there. Are the Wexford backs good enough? And the jury would be out on that. So I would fancy Kilkenny to win the Leinster Championship and probably Dublin and maybe Galway to join them in the three.
Very good. Okay. On to the ladies then. Their showpiece is on this weekend as well. A repeat of the All-Ireland Final between Cork and Galway in the National League Final. Do you see a repeat of that? Will Galway win or will Cork get a bit of revenge?
Well, yeah, it's a great game. I mean, the Camogie, there's really three top teams. But I was delighted this year. Tippett seemed to have joined them, Reggie, which is great because they were only beaten a point by Galway in the actual league. The All-Ireland final last year, Galway, Cork, Cork hit for home first, which is often when teams do that, that's the way it finishes. They hit for home with 15 minutes to go. They hit for home with a great goal last year in the final, Cork did. But Galway stood up and came back and still beat them 3 points, got a goal of their own. Galway have phenomenal players. The Sarsfields club, the McGrath sisters, I mean, they beat Owlert in the club final. The two of them are back, Sarah Dervin and Aoife Donoghue, who's an absolutely outstanding player with Galway. I just see them having the edge again over Cork. Cork have new management. Davy Fitz is in doing the coaching there. And Cork themselves have three All-Stars and two of them in the half back line. So they'll be difficult enough to penetrate. Laura Hayes, Lucy Tracy and in the middle of the park, Hannah Lucy. Some fantastic players there for Cork as well. Great tradition with Cork. I just see Galway getting across the line, Reggie, here by a point or two.
Okay, very good. And the Dublin scene is back. Up and running. What are the key games at Senior A this weekend?
Yeah, it's at the fourth round, Reggie, and the reason it's worth mentioning is the top four teams are all playing one another, so it's a good one. Dave Curtin has taken over in Ballyboden and he's going to go playing at home to Lucan. If they win that, there'll be four wins out of four, and they'll top the table. But the real game I'm looking forward to is it's a repeat of the county final between Nafina and Kilmacud Crokes, and Nafina have home advantage there. So I genuinely think that that'll be the game of the weekend, and I think probably Nafina will overturn Crokes this time.
Okay, it's time to turn our attention now just to give you to rugby, should I say, just to give you a bit of an update for those who are interested. I know that many are. The Ireland Sevens team are playing in the Singapore Sevens in rugby today. They've had a good win already over Fiji today, and they backed that up with another substantial win over Japan. So with France to come next, they've gotten off to a really, really good start in the Singapore Sevens. So well done to the Sevens team. Now I'm joined on the line by a man who, no more than myself, didn't really prefer the Sevens game, was a bit more built for comfort. Morning, Victor Costlow. How are you?
Very apt there, Reg. I thought you were going to ask me a question on Sevens. Well, God, I'm out of breath already.
No, I wouldn't do that to you. But we'll ask you about last night's brilliant game of rugby in the sports ground. I was glued to it. It was one of those games where you were kind of going into it thinking, ah, this will be okay. Connacht will put up a bit of a fight for a while, and then Leinster will show their power and they'll pull away in the end and they'll get the job done. And it didn't turn out that way at all. Connacht got off to the perfect start, getting their try early. And then they just battled their whole way through it. Leinster were good, but Connacht, what a game. What rugby we witnessed.
Yeah, we thought the days of you know, getting into a quagmire with Connacht was into a trench warfare were over, and certainly not. And I have to say that Connacht side is probably, you know, is definitely one of the best team they've had in decades. The mental strength for them to come back, assisted with the crowd, of course, was phenomenal against what, you know, aside with the recent reputation Leinster has, particularly with the recent win they had down there, which, as you said, they pulled away after putting up a couple of scores. So it was a great entertainment. You know, some questions for Leinster were great entertainment and great for the game, of course, and the provinces. Yeah, indeed.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I think Connacht, you know, they've had some sketchy results of late, but when it comes down to the battle and where they're, you know, they really have to put it on the line, they always come up trumps and they always put in big performances. And I mean, you know, the likes of Bealham stood up well for them. I thought Butler, Marmion, Carthy again at 10, he's putting in some great performances. And Hansen on the wing, like he just adds a level of excitement the whole time, every time he gets the ball. So, you know, dare I say it, at the moment they look like a team, compared to the effort that Munster put up against Leinster the week before, they look like a team that are probably playing second place to Leinster ahead of the other provinces at the minute.
Absolutely. And, you know, the evolution of Munster rugby back in the 90s and then later the Leinster rugby into consistent success was the one-off performances, the one-off wins. And, you know, obviously Connacht got some success in the last 5 to 10 years out in the sports ground. And they play that sports ground really, really well. They play the wind. The ground isn't as firm or as free-flowing. It doesn't allow free-flowing rugby like other stadia around Ireland and Europe and the European rugby. So they play those elements and the conditions very, very well. And actually Leinster, for all their successes recently, didn't. You know, so a team that relies so much on their skill, their talent, their reputation, their consistency, didn't actually play the elements the way Connacht did. So you'd hope from Connacht, and you always hope from Connacht, that they drive on from these performances and not just lead them as one-off. So as an Irish person, you hope, well, okay, in the Viva next week, when it's a different environment, you're home, you're away, but home to Leinster, you know, now's the time to keep that performance and develop on that performance. And if they do, then yes, absolutely, they're going to be up there with number two to Leinster, as you say, with the kind of current sort of demise of Munster. But, you know, it's great to see it, but you want to see more of it, because we've seen this before. As I said, you know, the start of the success of Leinster was the one-off wins, the big wins, but consistency is everything when it comes to cup rugby.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, we'll watch that space very keenly to see how they're able to progress, and look forward to that second match, of course, that they will have against Leinster, and see how they manage it when they're away from home. Munster, we mentioned them there. I was talking to a few Munster people during the week, and there's a real sense of, for the supporters, they just feel very lost at the moment. They're going away to Exeter this week. They're without a couple of their senior players. Obviously, O'Mahony been injured as well. They picked some of the younger guns. Now, a couple of those Munster supporters were saying that they're happy in some ways that the younger guns are going to get an opportunity as well, because they felt in the Leinster game that it was the younger players who stood up and were counted a bit more in that game. But Exeter are a strong team away from home, and Munster, I don't think we can really emphasise the importance of a big performance for them in this game, because Munster are at somewhat of a crossroads at this point, with no coaching staff for next year and their supporters wondering where the province are going.
You know, it's ridiculous. I mean, we spent a lot of decades in awe of Munster, frustrated with Munster, jealous of Munster, you know, loving Munster. At the end of the day, we need Munster. And the competition needs Munster. I mean, anyone who's out of Ireland will tell you, know straight away the difficulty of playing Munster in Thomond Park or Musgrave Park or even home. It's frustrating to watch when you talk about the supporters, Reg, you know, those empty seats in Thomond Park have never been seen before. Mm. You know, and, you know, I, as an Irish rugby person, want to change this. I don't understand why they don't have a coach in. I don't understand why they have someone who's leaving to go to Bath next year, who's going to leave this legacy, this negative legacy. And, you know, yes, they do have the players. There was a while where we were frustrated, well, there isn't much there in the academy, and the Leinster academy is very, you know, is much better run and so on. But we saw last week that the change of pace from when the younger players, particularly Ken Dillon and Casey, came on, you know, and, you know, obviously this week with the injury, they're forced to pick those players. And I've no doubt they'll get a result over there in Exeter, because Exeter are aware, I've never beaten Munster. So they're aware of Munster's tradition. And hopefully today the players will match that tradition. But it's extremely frustrating to watch. And, you know, we've spoken from Irish rugby, we've spoken about Raj and Paulie coming into the Irish setup. There's a load of great coaches out there from Munster, between that level, up to that level. James Cockton, Prendergast, yeah. You know, you've got Flannery. You know, Flannery is a very, very intelligent manager with all sorts of experience. And they're there in the sidelines. You know, there should be a brainstorming down in Munster with the crowd, with the people, with the genuine fans down there to get the Munster back in the show on the road. And if you look at Peter O'Mahony, I know we've had our difficulties watching Peter O'Mahony over the years, but for a guy who's captained the province and been on the team for the province for so long and not won any silverware is unheard of, absolutely unheard of. And, you know, we've always respected the doggedness of Munster, where sometimes they might not have had the talent, but they had the will, and that jersey meant something. And to see what's happening now and see those empty seats and see those kind of empty performances, it's horrible to watch. I've no doubt it'll turn around. And when you say you've spoken to Munster supporters, so have I, a lot, particularly last weekend during the game. Yeah. But, you know, we need Munster. Ireland need Munster. The Irish team need Munster. The provincial series need Munster. And it's really frustrating. I'm really, really passionate about how annoying this is to watch. With Van Graan sitting there, okay, yes, Roundtree is a good coach, but these coaches under their watch, watching decline, the slow but albeit fast decline also of Munster rugby, it's really, really frustrating to watch.
Yeah, well, like, I mean, you mentioned Roundtree there. I mean, we both know him well. We've played against him for many, many years, and he's a great guy, fantastic fella, but he has no head coaching experience. And, you know, you're sitting there looking at it going, and the supporters are, and they're kind of going, well, look, we've had this South African influx of coaching and players. What have we really got out of it? I mean, CJ was the one player that came into that from the South African setup and kind of made an impression. And he wasn't brought in that way. It kind of almost happened by accident with CJ Standard that he became the player that he was. But he was kind of in the middle of that tradition and brought through that. I mean, it feels like Munster have completely lost their way and lost sight of where they came from and what they once upon a time were. And they need to go back to the academies, the club system, the school system, and start all over again. But do that with Munster people who understand the tradition. I don't think that's going to work with Roundtree at coach and bringing in a load of other outside coaches again. It needs to be homegrown talent.
It never did work. And the reason being is you have to understand the Munster DNA, the ethos. If you look at when Michael Checa came in for Leinster and there was a derby, it was 2005 or 6, 2006, you were playing.
Yeah.
And Munster beat, yeah, you played in the semi-final in 2006, yeah. And Munster really, you look at the focus on those players in that game, and that epitomises Munster.
Yeah.
And they haven't really, okay, yes, they have had that since they won it that year, but you know, that's what you're looking for. You're not looking necessarily for talent. You know, you got Healy, you've got Casey, you've got real talent, Kendallon. You've got real talent there, but it was more than talent is what made Munster successful. It was much more than talent. Any team in Munster played in the past, be it Toulouse, Leinster, English sides, Leicester, Wasps, they were always way more talented, but they didn't have the heart that Munster have. Yet you bring in the foreign coaches, they can't derive that passion from the Munster players because they don't understand. And I remember Cheka saying after that game, he didn't understand the Munster ethos. He didn't understand the nature of the rivalry. And that's why, no offence, you guys lost that game, because he was driving from afar. He was objective looking at it.
Yeah.
It's homegrown Limerick and Cork, Tip, Munster people. You know, that's what you need. That's what you need in situ. And like, as I said, there's been times that Alan Quinlan's talked about on radio where, well, they don't have the depth. They do have the depth. They're just valuing the depth on talent and skill. Munster was never about that. That they grew into the skill. They grew into the hungry. They grew into the consistency of winning matches that shouldn't have been won. And that's homegrown in Munster. Yeah. And here's me as a Leinster man telling them what to do.
Yeah,
but what I'm saying is we all want it to happen. And we can see it unfolding in a hugely negative way when the answers are there, both in the players and the coaches. I mean, how many Munster coaches are in France? Yes, we talk about Rog and Paulie being eventually there, but we've got the likes of Cock and Prendergast and many more. And as I said, I'm a big fan of Flannery, you know, very intelligent manager, very intelligent coach who's been there. And yet, on the sidelines, you know?
That's the worst part. They had them and they've let them go. You know, that's the really sickening part about all of this. And you're right. I mean, that game in 2006, I remember it so well. They came up to Dublin. They flooded the Aviva with red everywhere. And we went out to a sea of red in that semi-final. And I'll never forget Cheka's face kind of going, what's happening here? And then after the game, exactly as you say, the answer being, oh, I didn't understand it. I just didn't know what that rivalry was until that game. And as you say, I mean, we had a hugely talented team against them that day, as did they. But it wasn't about talent on the day. It was about determination to win, sheer pig-headedness at times, you know, pure will that got them over the line on that and got it done. And Leinster developed that over times as well. And now Leinster, if you look at them, they have this almost strut and attitude about them. People talk about them, oh, they've got all the great players and they've got all the academies and they've got all these systems in place. But it's actually about their attitude and this strut that they have and almost a refusal to lose almost at times. And that's what Munster had but have lost.
Yeah, and it's heartbreaking for players. I mean, we went down and played in Thoma Park many times and I have the scars to prove that.
Mm.
But if you're a Munster player, you deserve to come out to a full Thoma Park.
Yeah.
And those fans, you know, we've been on the wrong side of those fans, but they know their rugby. They know their rugby and they respect rugby. And if they're not turning up to see their team, you've got a problem. The CEO of Munster has a problem that they're not willing to support their team because they fundamentally know this is wrong. It has to be corrected and corrected as soon as possible. But yes, Leinster have taken over that mantle, you know, with the Doggers. I remember being at the bottom of Rooks and you could feel the passion, the intensity of the hits of Axel and Frankie Sheen and Claw and God over your head. That's what those rooks meant to them, was just hit, hit, hit. So Roger will work it out at the back line, but our job is to pulverise and bully the opposition. And it took a long time to learn that and to oppose it, you know. And that's why I guess you and I are frustrated that is just diminishing as we speak, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I got a good lashing for questioning intensity once upon a time of a certain captain, and the point I was trying to make is now coming to fruition, because I just feel that was the starting point of where that was starting to slip, that level of what it meant. And I think we're seeing it in spades now, and it's like you said, we don't want to see it because it's not good for Irish rugby. We can't have just one province dominating everything and winning all around them and everybody else falling by the wayside, because that will eventually lead to problems at national level. Quickly about Ulster, they're away to Toulouse, a big, big ask for them to try and get a job done.
Yeah, it's a big ask, but actually over the last couple of decades they don't have the apprehension that normal, like Munster and Connacht and Leinster, have gone to France. I mean, I think they're definitely going to look for a performance and then wait for next week back home in the Kingspan. Not a bad side they picked either. They've got big centres there as well.
Yeah.
They've got informed players. You know, they've got you know, Cooney and Billy Burns back at the halfback, so they've a bit of, they're solid, you know. So I don't think this is going to be walkover for the free flowing Toulouse rugby, but you know, typical Ulster, you know, they're not really mixing it at the top, but when it comes to these type of performances, they're well capable of pulling one out of the bag.
Time to turn our attention to horse racing now. Delighted to be joined on the line by the one and only George McDonagh. Morning, George. How are you?
Good morning, Reggie, and congratulations for your victory over Connacht last night.
Well, I tell you what, it was one tough match. I enjoyed every bit of it. What a cracking game of rugby. I know we're on to talk about sports, but I have to give it a quick mention. It was an unbelievable match, to be fair.
It was a game I'd say you'd have loved to have played yourself. Plenty of physical contact. Great game. And a great advertisement for the sport, I thought, in Ireland.
Absolutely, no question about it. Yeah, we'll be glued to the second leg of that when it's on in the Aviva. Okay, more importantly, I'd like to, you know, a game I'd like to get better at is this horse racing. Give us a few winners. And we're talking about the Grand National, of course. It's the race that everybody looks forward to. People who know nothing about horses, they put together sweeps. I do it in my own house with my kids, picking names out of hats, and it's a great bit of crack. There's a sort of a magical nature about the Grand National, isn't there?
There is a magical nature about it. It's a magical nature about the day, Reggie. As you rightly say, every workplace, every hostelry, every business has a sweep on the Grand National. Everybody gets involved. It's a wonderful experience to be there. Today we see a massive field dominated by the Irish. I mean, it's long odds on that it'll be an Irish-trained winner. We've been so dominant. We had 10 of the first 11 home last year. And, of course, last year, unfortunately, there was nobody at the track. We had the fairy tale success where the first lady ever to win the Grand National, Rachel Blackmore, was successful aboard Minetta Times. She's back today. What a season she's had. She's won the Champion Hurdle. She's won the Gold Cup. She's the darling of the punters. Forecast to go off about 10-1. I think shorter because there was days when certain jockeys were the housewife's choice, as we say. But I think Rachel would be the housewife's choice today. Everybody knows, every young kid going racing, what's Rachel Blackmore riding? She rides Manila Times, last year's winner. Can she win it? I think she's got too much weight, or the horse has got too much weight, but certainly will lack nothing from assistance on the saddle, in my book. It's a wonderful race. JP McManus, mob-handed. He's only ever won it once. Can he win it again today? I think he can. When the weights come out, I put up number 24, Annabelle Fly. Yeah. I backed him at 40-1 when the weights came out. He's now advertised at 80-1. Wow. But I still think this horse, he's a 12-year-old, not much mileage on the clock. I think he's got a massive chance. He's one of my four against the field. And Tony Martin's team are in very, very good form. And Luke Dempsey could be in for a fairy tale day. My second of the four selections I put up were number 8, Borough Saint. Fourth last year, was drunk tired in the last two furlongs last year, but his preparation has been a little different this year, and he's number 8. I think Paul Townend will give him a good spin out the back and try and make ground late on. The third of my four is number 10, Longhouse Poet. Now, this is another horse that has attracted a lot of money. He won the Thyestes Chase at Goran Park in January, and over the years, that has been a good trial for this race. Back in 2006, his trainer, Martin Brazel, won the Thyestes Chase with number 6, Valverde, came on and won the Grand National later the year in April. Darrow O'Keefe, the jockey, owned by Sean and Bernadine Mulrine, great supporters of all things Roscommon, Roscommon GA and stuff like that, and very, very good owners. And Longhouse Poet will be the third of my selection. And the fourth of my selections is an English horse, number 33, Commodore, trained by Venetia Williams, ridden by Charlie Deutsch, gets in as a reserve, won very well at Cheltenham early this year. I think they've got the key to this horse that needs time between his races. Jumped very well at Cheltenham, and prior to that, in a couple of runs, hadn't jumped too well. But he would be the fourth of my selections today, and I'm still sticking with Annabelle Fly. He is a 12-year-old, nearly as old as myself, but I think the horse has got a massive chance today by four against the field of the National, Reggie. Annabelle Fly, Borough Saint, Longhouse Poet, and Commodore.
Brilliant. Great value for all of our listeners there with those. And certainly, I can't ignore you on Annabelle Fly. I'll have to have a little flutter on that one myself. Okay, Lucky 15 as well. George, if you could give us that, that'd be great.
Lucky 15 today, Reggie. The first one is number 9 in the 620 at Aintree. And it's a horse called Houlan Bator de Shah. Now, for a guy that got an F in intercert French. That's
not
as
bad.
Best as I can do with
not
it.
Not bad.
It's as best as it's something. It's like a French Leno call, to be quite honest, Reggie. Paul Towner and Willie Mullins ran very well in the Cheltenham bumper, considering he pulled very hard early to put a hood on today. He's two wins in France prior to that, and around 8-1, he's a bit of value. Second selection goes in the 225, the 2.5 mile novice hurdle. Three stripe life train by Gordon Elliott. The Elliott team are back in better form this week than they were 2 weeks ago. Davy Russell has had no luck this week, really, but I think he could deliver on three stripe life. Second to Sir Gerhard at Cheltenham. Time will tell. That was a really tough task. That's our second selection. Third selection is Edward Stone in the 3 o'clock. An effortless winner of the Arkell Chase at the Cheltenham Festival. He'd be very, very short, but I'm putting him in because I think we need at least one winner, and hopefully we get one to back him up for a double. This is a very, very good two-miler, and I think he'll win the Novices Chase, Edward Stone. And the fourth and final selection on my nap of the four is a horse I like the way you're thinking, who runs in the opening three-mile handicap hurdle. I actually think this horse could take a hand in the Galway plate later on this season at July, but twice a winner at Galway, but at Cheltenham, he was stopped three different occasions during the race by fallers and horses coming backwards and horses that were hampered. And I like the way you think it is 18-20-1, Reggie.
Right.
Runs in the first race, will be ridden by Mark Walsh for Gavin Cromwell, and that's the lap of my four. I like the way you think it.
Thanks for listening to Dublin Stalking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 from myself, Ken, and Reggie. Have a good weekend.
Ha ha ha.